Are you there?
I'm here. How are you,
Woohoo!
then?
I'm
Morning.
good, how are you? I'm gonna turn
Good.
off my camera, so I don't need that to be. Not that you don't need to be looking at me in my nightgown, but.
Well, it saves bandwidth too, right?
Yeah, it saves bandwidth, is
Gets
my.
our audio a little better.
Well, that's what I
That's what
think.
I always figured, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I always think too, is that the audio is better when we're not. And it's been my experience, so. I know that that's true. So, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Journey Home with Bruce Rawls and Lynn Johnson. And we have been going through the book, The Journey Home, The Obstacles to Peace and A Course of Miracles, by Dr. Kenneth Wapnick. And so far, I am really enjoying it. Last year, we did Gary Renard's newest book, and one did it take us a whole year to do that book, but now I see that Gary has that out on audiobook as well. The
I
Lifetimes
know.
When Jesus and Buddha Knew Each Other, History of Mighty Companions is out on audio, so look for that.
Isn't that cool? And if they want the whole book with tremendously enhanced annotation by yours truly and Lynn Johnson, they can go to ACIM blog and listen to a whole year of our talking about the book and while we read
Exactly. It's absolutely, absolutely. And I'm going to
it.
post. Go ahead.
Oh, that was it.
I'm going to post that on the Disappearance of the Universe group too. So people there who do like to read Gary's book and listen to Gary and all might learn to like to listen to us too.
You never know.
You never know.
There could be an audience somewhere
Yep, and our ideas
in our dreams, right?
in our dreams, there is an audience in my dream, and actually, it's me. So,
Exactly. Yeah. The double entendre and pun was intended there.
I love it. All right. So, I'm on location 582. So I don't know where you are. I'm in the Kindle
Oh,
version.
okay. Yeah, here's where it's interesting. The annotation on the FIP official version of the course comes up now and then, and I find myself even within the foundation being the champion for using the annotation, because it's like, well, people who are using different translations, and people who are using Kindle and text, the imprinted version, and all the digital versions. There's a standard way to refer to each sentence in the three volumes, and that and the supplements, and that's pretty cool. Which actually will come in very handy over time. I think the more languages it's translated into, the more devices that the course gets put into. And so anyway, if you go to and click on acm.org and click on annotations in the menu, it's one of the sub-menu items. It's not at the top, but it's a second-level menu item. You'll see how to do that. It's also on facim.org. It's under, I think it's resources there. But there's basically a standard way of referring to each of the three volumes and the two supplements that basically everyone can find immediately. Well, not immediately, but very very quickly. Exactly which sentence you're or group of sentences you're referring to, which is pretty cool. So this is where, since we're not don't have an annotation for Ken's book, The Journey Home, we're just having to Lynn and I. I'm in happen to be using the Treeware print version, and Lynn's using a digital version in this particular case. So that's why we have to kind of resynchronize every Saturday. A quick technical aside, I guess. So end of that.
Interesting, and I personally, I really, really appreciate the FIP version with the annotations because, yes, you can say text chapter 12, section 5, paragraph 3, sentence 2, and
Right,
people will know
exactly.
exactly where that is.
Yeah.
And when you have it not annotated, you don't have that. You can't really do that. It's a kind of a guide and a roadmap. But
Exactly.
something interesting. I just I have a Saturday morning call with a group, and we do the workbook lesson of the day. And one of the persons in the group has the new version that Robert Perry put out, The Circle of Atonement, mm-hmm. that version.
The 900-page book or whatever it is?
Yes. And mm-hmm. and she said, well, some of these things may be different in this book than in your version. And I said, well, no, throughout the entire Urtext and everything, the workbook is one thing that was consistent. It didn't shift or change. It was always, all the words are the same. And then when she was reading it, she said a couple of words that were different than what I was reading. And I was really surprised. And I thought about it, the difference in the meaning that happened when she read it, because to me, I'm going to find it now, because I do have that copy of that book that Dove sent to me. And,
okay.
Let me see here. It's actually where Jesus says cannot in the, let's see, paragraph 3. Yeah.
While you're looking that up, I'll just make one more comment on the annotations. Since I've been helping Foundation for Inner Peace put the weekly thoughts out online after Carol Hansen Gray, after many, many years of putting those together, beautiful graphics, and finally is on to doing other things, and kudos to Carol. You know, I've kind of picked up the slack. I'm posting those to Facebook on Sunday mornings, and also every Sunday morning it goes out at 11 a.m. Pacific time onto the website. So each of those new weekly thought graphics now has, for the last month plus now, has both an English and a Spanish translation and annotation. So the annotations, interestingly, in Spanish are identical except for a couple of words for, what is it? I think the workbook has a different letter. Instead of W for workbook, it's I can do that really quick. Well, you're like, in case you found what you're looking for, but it's because there's a Spanish word for workbook, so there's a different letter that abbreviates it. But other than that, the numbers are identical. So even if you don't recall what the letter stands for, you can actually see. Here it is. Okay, let me go back. Yeah, it's L for lecciones and W for workbook.
Oh,
the annotations. So, for example, the one that's the weekly thought that just went out the other day for March 31st, a week ago almost, is workbook part 1, lesson 75, sentence, or paragraph 3, sentence 1. And then so the annotation is W-lowercase p, Roman numeral I, .75.3:1. And it's almost identical for the Spanish, the only difference being the capital W is replaced with a capital L. Instead of W for workbook, it's capital L for lecciones. So.
Very interesting. No, I didn't find the thing I was looking for. So.
Okay. Well, anyway, end of that little bit of annotation trivia there.
and that is very interesting.
So if you know people who are Spanish speakers, let them know that the weekly thoughts are now going out in Spanish.
En español.
Por supuesto. And that's also on the website as well as on the Mad Mimi subscription.
That's awesome. Awesome.
SDF.org.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
Anyway.
Well, let us get to our book. And I think we were going to... Were we going to back up? I think we ended on the paragraph from text chapter 13 that says you have built your whole insane belief system.
Yes.
So
I think we were going to back up a couple paragraphs.
Okay, so we can do that. Oh, sorry.
To overcome the world. Is that?
Yeah, to overcome. Okay, there we go. You want to read?
Start in?
Yeah.
Oh, sure, either way. I'll read if you want. To overcome the world is no more difficult than to surmount your little wall.
Oh, and I wanted to point this out. I'm sorry. Maybe point out that this is from the section of the Obstacles to Peace.
Yes,
so,
exactly.
When it's in that big bold font. So anyway,
right.
Go on.
Right. Yeah, and then Ken comments. Seen on a larger scale, we made the world and do not want to let it go. Simply because if we let it go, then nothing will be left but God. And that is what frightens us. But that is all it is. The idea is so simple, and yet we have a class on A Course in Miracles like this, and return to our daily living, and everything gets us upset. I'm sure nobody listening has ever experienced that.
Not me.
Okay, and then he goes on. It could be the most trivial thing in the world, and it will just blow everything for us. What this statement is saying is that no matter what it is, no matter how powerful it seems, it is nothing but a, quote, little wall of hatred, unquote. And it is hatred. Certainly, that is what is emphasized here. Everything in the world ends up being as being hateful. Many times it is obvious to us that it is hate, but many other times it is not. Even more to the point, we made the world to protect the image we have of ourselves as separated individuals. If the world goes, so goes the underlying thought the defense was made to protect. But since the thought itself is nothing, the defense of a world is nothing as well. What world is the Course would say, right? But that's the metaphysics we have to get to by forgiving our projections onto it. Okay. And beyond it all, again, is the God we believed we left and attacked. Thus, our investment in the world is coming from our fear that if we give up this investment, the whole world will disappear. And along with it, our individuality. I always like to emphasize the duality and individuality. We read the following from a powerful passage in, quote, The Fear of Redemption, unquote, in chapter 13 of the text, to which we shall devote considerably more attention in a later chapter. And this is one of my favorites because it's basically telling us like it is in a very gentle but pointed way. You have built your whole insane belief system because you think you would be helpless in God's presence and you would save yourself from his love because you think it would crush you into nothingness. You think you have made a world God would destroy, and by loving him, which you do, you would throw this world away, which you would. Meaning, hey, get over it. This is our class. So take as much time as you want. You know, drag it out, make yourself as miserable and suffer as long as you want. But that's not the recommended approach. And we can take the high speed train or the supersonic transport back to that piece anytime we want just by forgiving.
Exactly. And it reminds me, I mean, today's lesson is all about this, actually. And, mm-hmm. and because it Jesus goes into such detail into how insane we are and how we believe that we are all these things that we're not, and that the only correction of it is to think only with the thoughts of God, to stop thinking the thoughts of the ego and start thinking the thoughts of God. We had a conversation yesterday here in this room talking to our friend Melissa from, she's in Fraser Park, California. We were talking about this whole idea of the world being a dream and that everything here is a dream figure. And, you know, if we believe that, why do we want to keep holding on to it? And talking about experiences that we've had, which I've had and I'm sure you have, where you've like been on like the edge or the brink or just feeling like, you know, just one more push and I'll be like out of here over this. You know, whatever I'm experiencing right now is like I feel like I'm on the verge of this awakening or whatever you call it. And maybe you're like, I've done this in meditation, gotten into a zone where it was like just all this calm, peaceful, amazing place. And the thought came into my head, how much longer is this going to be? Because I have to get up and fix dinner. like the little trigger comes in because of fear. ego says, you can't, do this. You have responsibilities. People are thinking about you, wondering where their food is. So, you got to get out of this and, take care of business in the world. And we make that choice because we in our mind, we are being selfless. But in the ego's mind, the ego knows that once you step over that threshold, once you go beyond that place, once you have decided wholly for the voice for God, for nothing else, that you no longer will listen to its demands. You won't care about dinner. In fact, dinner doesn't even exist in this world. you'll be out of its ability to control you. And so, of course, it's terrified. It's going to lose control and lose its very identity because ego is only in existence to identify as us. That's the only purpose of it. Ego doesn't exist when we're not around. If we weren't here to notice it, it'd be like that tree falling in the forest. It wouldn't make a noise because there's no receiver. There's no one here. So,
That's an important point, Link, because I think that's really at the heart of the challenging metaphysics of course, but challenging but rewarding, infinitely challenging and infinitely rewarding, I suppose you could say, because it really asks us to give up what we think of as an infinite universe, and we're this seemingly very finite, fragile, vulnerable, victimized creature within it, and yet. I was reminded, and yet in truth, we're invulnerable, invincible, and infinitely safe and secure because our true identity is a shared one, and that shared identity is eternally innocent and free and peaceful and loving, and we don't even know what love is, but we know that that's beyond this world of trying to reconcile opposites and trying to figure out what that could possibly mean in a world that's steeped in duality. But it's an ongoing process to let go of that perception and the ego's interpretation, more precisely, of the world, which is to reinforce the idea of a separate self. Because once that's let go of, that paragraph I just read at the end there, you would throw away the world. You would, because we do love that oneness. We do love that perfect being where everyone is included. And, the best word we have in our language to describe that is God. Because we know that on some level that if we really accepted that, it would just blow away anything that this world had to offer. And the offerings of this world are made up. And if we examine them carefully, which, of course, in Miracles suggests on every page, to do that with gentle and kind, patient objectivity, if we just kind of look at all the stuff that we've invested in our own little personal bucket lists, and, everyone's got a different one, but they're all basically... There's something, come down to something in the world that's going to do it for me, or some combination of things. And if I just keep, at it, maybe the world is going to do it for me. You're right. But ultimately, there really isn't anything in the world that's going to do it for us because there isn't a world in reality. But we've fabricated this enormous dream that's photorealistic and high production value, YouTube 3D movie kind of stuff with resolution that knocks the socks off any technology we can come up with, at least so far. And how convincing is that? It's extremely convincing, but it's not real. It's not the real thing. The real deal is the thing that we've so carefully hidden from ourselves that we don't even believe it exists anymore. Because beyond existence, it's really the eternal being. Anyway, I've rambled on.
And the hallmark of all of it, and this is the way you can tell always, is because it changes all the time.
Yeah,
it shifts and changes all the time.
Exactly.
Shift and changing all the time. And what you thought was good turns bad. What you thought was
yep.
what you thought was alive turns dead.
Yeah, it kind of ties into the two thought systems too. That, you know, the ego's thought system is seek but do not find. The Holy Spirit's thought system is seek and always find. You know, because if you're using the Holy Spirit to look for peace, and that's really the only thing worth looking for, and the only thing we'll ever truly find, if we use that thought system, we're going to find it. And that's what we're afraid of. That's the obstacle, is our fear to get rid of it, as Ken is elaborating in this chapter.
Isn't that amazing? When I first read that, you know, the desire to get rid of peace, I was like, what in the hell are you talking about?
What do you mean? Not me. Really.
But then I looked and saw how many instances I've had that I could have gladdened myself that I decided instead to look for sin and guilt and to be in fear. It's just amazing, you know, how once you get that you're doing it to yourself, you know, once I got, and that's the secret to salvation, is that you're doing it to yourself. You know, once I got that, then everything that seemed to come up that was anything was easy to see through. You know, it was easy to see through it. And I think that's, you know, thank God for that light, because, you know, otherwise, you know, I would have given up a long time ago. But once you can see through the illusion and see that God has never left and that God's peace is here always, once you actually see that, feel that, and recognize it, then you don't have to judge about what happens. You can, the only judgment you can have is what the judgment that God said to Jesus when he was being baptized in the Jordan River: "This is my son with whom I am well pleased." So that's all you got to think. This, I am your son with whom you're well pleased. and nothing can change that.
Yeah, and just in case anybody gets the idea, you were referring to a specific person. A Course in Miracles basically says if there is no world, and that's the central course thought the Course attempts to teach, then there are no people, and so it has nothing to do with specifics. And tag, we're all it, as far as God's one Son.
Exactly.
And pure non-duality. I mean, that's the only way it could work.
Exactly. It couldn't work any other way.
And no one is left out. And if we leave anyone out, then we're saying, oh, no, I'm not ready for that non-duality. I'm not ready for that peace. I'm not ready for, profoundly serene peace. I had a real interesting experience. I'm going to quick aside. I was doing something the other day that was causing me some concern. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to turn it over to the Holy Spirit and just sleep on it. And I had this most wonderful dream, and I translated it when I woke up the next morning, as I'm sure other listeners can relate to. You know, in the dream, you have these mystical experiences sometimes. You know, I'm talking about nighttime dreams, you know, lucid dreams, that sort of thing. And every once in a while, you get one of those where you know there's something that's far more profound than words can convey, and even your thoughts about it afterwards, can quite put together in some way. Because we use dualistic thinking, and then further dilute it and distort it with, you know, dualistic language. But the essence of the dream was I had taken the hand of a helper. And I had no idea who this person was. But it was a feeling of, like, when I reached out and took that hand, there was just a peacefulness that came over me that I couldn't possibly describe. And yet it was very real, more real than anything here. So anyway.
Wow. Was it Joe Biden?
What's that?
Was that Joe Biden?
Good one. Oh, that's funny. That's so funny. Yeah, and again, that's why I say I translated it into something that had a physical metaphor, but it wasn't that at all. I knew that when I woke up, I immediately knew that wasn't what it was about. But that's kind of the closest thing that I could use as a metaphor to describe that experience. You know what I mean?
So. I do. Yeah. But yeah, that's interesting. And you know, I have. First off, for anyone who has thoughts about their dreams, The dreams that we have don't come from anywhere else. It's not like something came into our mind and told us a story, or that Jesus sent us a message, or something like that. This is all in our own mind. All of it is in our own mind. And even Jesus is in our own mind, which I think if Helen would have got that, she would have realized that, you know, she was more than what she thought she was. But all of this is inside of our own mind. So, when you're dreaming, you're just having an experience that's demonstrating to you something that if you can look at it and see it, just like this whole world, you can look at it and see your own reflection in everything, and it tells you something about yourself. So that this holding of the hand, or I've had some similar type things where there's been a connection of extreme, I don't even know what to call it. Love is a word for it, but it's something that's so far beyond that. It's like adoration or I can't even think of a word that it is, the feeling. But, feeling so loved.
Mm-hmm.
And then, recognizing that was me. That's how loved I am. That I love myself.
And that self includes everyone and everything, because in perfect oneness, pure non-duality, the observer is the observed, and there's the loved is the love. both the sender and the receiver, if you will, there's no other, so it has to be, self-contained in an all-inclusive identity.
Exactly. So
which we can't really grok here. We can't really fathom that, but we can at least intellectually get it. But every once in a while we get, these experiences that kind of give us a little taste of, oh, that's right, this really is our heritage, and our destiny, and what we will come to know as our true eternal experience of the ecstatic peace of oneness, and that's the real reality that we're afraid of, which is the craziest thing. And Ken is taking this whole book to help us get through overcoming the unfounded, unconscious sin, guilt, fear thought system that seems to make that resistance possible.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I'm going to reread this paragraph from chapter 13 and move on, because this really is exactly what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
The sphere of redemption. You have built your whole insane belief system because you think you would be helpless in God's presence, and you would save yourself from his love because you think it would crush you into nothingness. You think you have made a world God would destroy, and by loving him, which you do, you would throw this world away, which you would. Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. And, again, that reminds me of a phrase in today's lesson. Let me go and look at that real quick, because I think it's pretty...
This whole week, the workbook lessons for this week are just wonderful. And I think that I've been listening to and participating in the online classes that Tim Wise and Lynn Corona are doing, the School for A Course in Miracles. You can go to their website, sfacim.org, and I also put on the Rocky Mountain Miracles website a month at a time of the YouTube recordings. And anyway, this past week, both of the classes that I attended were just brilliant, and Tim was going over, reviewing the 90s lessons, 93, 94, 95, and so on, basically the one that has always grabbed me is that I think it's the top very first few lines of 93 is you think you're the home of evil, darkness, and sin, and that's basically the premise that we need to look at and overcome. But this whole group of lessons deals with that resistance and that misconception, and how we really just need to look at this with very gentle, patient, awareness with the Holy Spirit, without condemnation, and when we find ourselves backsliding, as those lessons remind us, Psalms 95, it says, your resistance, the thing to do is when you find yourself, in forgetting to do the lessons, that's just an indication that you have enormous resistance, and to be patient with yourself, and to just say, okay, rather than beat yourself up and say the day's lost, hit the reset button and say, like, let's start it over, because there's no reason to just, throw in the towel just because you missed doing one of the hourly or every 15-minute class, because we all do that, and just say, because the world is more of a priority, and it just say, wow, just notice, and I love Ken's brilliance in this, where he says, just notice how much we've made this world a priority, and, be comfortable with that, not in the sense of saying that's how it's going to be, but just say to yourself, oh, I've obviously been so afraid of that piece that I go to extreme lengths to not remember to do the things that will bring me peace. And so I need to very gently let go of that resistance by just, whenever I catch myself having that resistance, to say, oh, I must have been afraid of love, and then pick up where you left off.
Exactly.
Without making a big deal about it.
Exactly, and that's what today's lesson is all about. And what I was reading, that was so funny. He says, mind apart from spirit cannot think. It has denied its source of strength and sees itself as helpless, limited, and weak, dissociated from its function now. It thinks it is alone and separate, attacked by armies amassed against itself and hiding in the body's frail support. Now must it reconcile unlike with like, for this is what it thinks that it is for. That's what we're doing. We're trying to figure out unlike from like and sort things out. And Jesus then says, waste no more time on this. Stop wasting your time.
Right. He doesn't mean stop brushing your teeth, stop going to work, stop paying your bills, stop talking to your family and your coworkers and doing all the normal things behaviorally that you do. He basically says stop investing in the ego's interpretation of those things. And we can multitask and actually listen to the Holy Spirit and do all the normal things we do in our daily 24/7s, right?
Exactly. And we do, and we will. And Jesus did. I mean, that's all you got to know, is Jesus did the same dang thing. He went through all this.
If I got nothing more than that out of our year rereading Gary's fourth book of the lifetimes when Jesus and Buddha knew each other, to me it was like, hey, they were just like us, and they persisted and made this a priority, and eventually, sooner or later, everyone will, but why not speed up the process and just recognize that that's what we really want, and then, gladden ourselves and give ourselves more and more opportunities for the peace by looking at the resistance, forgiving ourselves for that resistance, and moving on.
Yeah. And that's why we get the speed up. I mean, that's why we're doing the celestial speed up now, is because we got this book. If they would have this book back in, 1 BC or AD or whatever, it may have been a different story with Jesus. Probably not. But, of course, it's all part of the script, and so here we are. Here we are, and I'm excited. It thrills me that, knowing that we did make the choice to come here, to be here now in this place and this time, this amazing occurrence, this gift is here. And so all the gifts of Ken, reading, writing these books, and the gifts of ACIM Gather Radio, and the gifts of ACIM Blog, and all this. I mean, because we have decided to join together, the speed at which this is happening is phenomenal, and yet it seems so far away. Every single day I look at it and think, why am I not there? But then it comes time to practice the lesson, and I'm like, do I have to do this now?
Well, it's because we look at our lives through a microscope, and we don't see the bigger picture. We're in total myopic tunnel vision about our lives because we don't see the broader context of the fact that, you know, if we, I think it's helpful. I find if I look back, you know, 10 years, let alone 50, and then see, wow, I mean, the changes in just this one lifetime of the amount of peace and the lowering of the fear and the lowering of the anxiety and the you know, just discomfort mentally is palpable. I mean, but I look back over a longer period of time. If I, you know, if you just look day to day and just kind of zoom way in, you know, you may have seemingly good days, seemingly bad days, but overall, if we're practicing this curriculum of forgiveness, it's going to have a cumulative effect, and that really is the fast track. That is that high-speed bullet train or that supersonic transport
Well, think about it this equivalent. Way. Yes, because what you're talking about is going from horizontal thinking day by day by day to vertical thinking. So we're on a train track going choo-choo-choo-choo, and all of a sudden we're on a rocket ship, and we straight
exactly.
up. You know, that's the difference.
Vertical. Elevation,
yeah. Yeah, and you know this, but maybe people who are in the audience may not know this, that the fastest way to travel to, like if I wanted to fly to China and had the capability to do it, the fastest way for me to get to Beijing or wherever is to go vertical, to just go straight up out of the atmosphere as the Earth turns. It actually... moves, I don't have to. And I can go back down when I'm right above it. I mean, it sounds far-fetched, but it's absolutely true. That's how the SST works, the supersonic transport, is it goes up high enough that the turning of the Earth actually moves it that many miles. It doesn't have to go horizontal that far. But does that make sense?
I think it actually might have to do with the fact that you're at a higher elevation where the atmosphere is less, in terms of the physics involved. But conceptually, metaphorically, I think the point is well taken, is that you know, we have to get in a vertical orientation in order to really make more rapid progress. And I like to think of it as, instead of going through every single corridor in a maze, what you can do by putting one hand on a wall and never letting go and get through a maze eventually, it may take a long time, but that's a topological little aside there. But the easiest way is to climb above the walls if it's a maze that has no roof, metaphorically, which ours does not have a roof, and then look around and say, well, where are you going to? And then just hop over the walls, you know, and take this the straight line, point A to point B, kind of thing. And quantum forgiveness really is kind of like that, in the sense that, you know, we basically use the help of the Holy Spirit to see that there's not even any point A or point B. Ultimately, we just get above the battlefield or the maze and realize that that's where the peace is, and we don't have to go anywhere. We can just do whatever we seem to be doing in the world of form, but with a different teacher, with a different thought system, and that makes all the difference.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. So I'm going to continue reading. I'm going to read that last paragraph again, because now we're on
It's worth the third read, yeah.
Yeah, it's worth the third read. Yeah, okay. You have built your whole insane belief system because you think you would be helpless in God's presence, and you would save yourself from His love because you think it would crush you into nothingness. You think you have made a world God would destroy, and by loving Him, which you do, you would throw this world away, which you would. This is text chapter 13, section 3, paragraph 4. So, in case you're wondering where that is. All right, so on to the next paragraph. We shall move. I always say that we play this game at night with spaceships. And I always say, when I get a flying card, I'm like, we shall fly. I know, that's not funny. But anyway, throwing this world away is the only thing that would ever make us happy. But in our stubborn insanity, we prefer to be right. Now, Jesus is telling us that in text chapter 29, section 7. We prefer to be right than to be happy. And we won't throw the world away because we want to be right.
I made this really nice bucket list and I worked really hard making it. I don't want to give that up in order to be peaceful.
Yeah, no kidding.
Come on now.
Yeah, you know, I saw the other day, and I'm not saying this about anybody in particular, but I saw a friend of mine, fell down the stairs and hit his head and died. And he was a Buddhist. And, you know, I thought about the Buddhist practices that you do preparing yourself for death. You know, so you're prepared to, you know, step at the moment of death to make the choice to go into the real world or, you know, whatever. And, or else you think about the world and you go back to the world. That's kind of how it works, or seemingly. Anyway, I was thinking about that. And I was thinking, and that morning I had gotten up and it was dark and there was a cat sleeping on the stairs and I accidentally almost stepped on the cat and I almost fell down the stairs. And I thought, wow, I wonder if there was a cat involved in that fatal accident. But that really is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about spending your whole life preparing yourself for a... This is what we're doing. You and I, we're doing this the whole time, right? I'm trying to find this out. I'm reading this book. I'm doing these lessons. I'm, you know, what is the purpose? What am I reaching for here? And the fact is that it's already here. We already have it. What we're reaching for is to be able to recognize it, to be able to see past the crap that's preventing me from seeing the Christ mind, the world, the real world, God's love for me. All of that stuff are the things that I'm holding on to, actually. You know, I prefer my family's love. You know, I prefer the world's love. I prefer, you know, to eat my own food. I prefer, you know, I want to be right. I think that what I have here, you know, what I made is really going to satisfy me more than what God made for me. And it's the ego's entire thought system that wants to be right about whatever it is. I'm going to go on and read. I shouldn't carry on talking. On a smaller scale, within our own personal worlds, our feelings of inadequacy and self-hatred over factors such as our intellectual inferiority or incompetence with regard to computers or other skills, for example, are just shadows of the guilt that is in our mind. It is the content of this guilt that is the problem, not the specific forms in which it is symbolized. And so, you know, Ken has moved us now from thinking, you know, the problem is, you know, that something's not right in the world, to our belief in our own incompetence, our own inferiority, our own smallness, and looking at the world that appears to be so broken, and recognizing our responsibility for what we see. And so that can only bring guilt. And so it's the content of this guilt that's the problem. And that's why you don't, when we talk about forgiveness, and this is just my own thought as well, I may be completely wrong, but I think if, you know, well, anyway, let me just say what I'm going to say, that when you talk about forgiveness, people think that I have to go back into every thought, every incident, every scene, everything that happened in my life, and, you know, look at it, forgive it, let it go. But he's talking about content, not form. So if the content of my guilt is the belief that that I made a world that's broken that needs to be fixed, then whatever form, I'm going to see it in every form. Exactly. I'm going to see it in every form. So I can't go back and fix every form. I can't forgive every form. I can forgive the content. I can forgive the belief that things can go wrong.
Yeah. There's also, even though there's no explicit mention of the word holographic in the course, probably because this was scribed in the 60s when lasers and holography were still in their infancy. Might not have been there anyway, but I think that the principle is still there in many places, and that is that the whole isn't every seemingly separate part. And that's why if we can truly forgive one person or one thing or one situation completely, we've done the whole thing, because it's the content. And it's that completion that doesn't require going through this seemingly infinite long list of things that we feel that we've have issues with in order to do our forgiveness question. We just have to holographically, maybe archetypally is another way to look at it, do that forgiveness of whatever comes up, and eventually, we don't know how long it's going to take, but eventually, we don't have to forgive every atom in the world of space and time. We just have to forgive what comes up in our minds moment to moment, and let loose of the ego's interpretation and just not identify with that. And eventually we'll get to the point where it's an automatic habit and it won't even matter what comes up, because we will be in the habit of forgiving and being at peace. And that's where, at some point it will be irrelevant, the form. And we don't have to do, like I say, the whole cosmos. We don't have to have this giant, infinitely long spreadsheet or checklist or something like that. It's just basically going through each day and forgiving what comes up in front of our face that day.
Exactly.
And use that as a metaphor for what's in our mind. And it's like, that's what I need to forgive. It's not the form. It's the guilt that's behind the form. It was where I originally projected in an unconscious way, but now I'm bringing it back consciously to where I can see that it's not about the other person, it's not about the other situation, the other thing, the other whatever seems to be outside myself. It's always about the choice in my mind, and that choice is where the salvation lies, where the problem is healed.
Exactly.
The solution come together.
And what people have a lot of times, and I know I've done this myself, where, I thought that I've forgiven a situation, and then it comes back later. And then it comes back in another form, and it comes back in another form, and it comes back in another form. And I keep thinking, well, I forgive this. But because I'm only forgiving the form, and I'm not forgiving the content, which is the belief that, this thing could go wrong, the thought that something outside of heaven could be happening, or the thought that that I could have undone what God made, which is really the bottom line. The whole thing is the belief that I have undone what God made. So if you can get that and go to that every time, then if it comes up again, like today's lesson, you can just replace that thought with the thought that salvation comes from my one self, and this thought can be changed. I can think the thoughts of the Holy Spirit, which is what you do. And instead of going and saying, let me psychoanalyze myself and figure out how this happened and figure out who did this to me, then all you can do is just say, I don't want this thought, Holy Spirit. Here, take it and replace it with the thought of God.
And it's not about denial. It's about actually looking at this very same specifics, but to use the specific forms, as he says in the last paragraph here, that for forgiveness rather than condemnation.
Exactly. So, it works. That's what I find so amazing, is that it works, and it's so much easier and it's so much more wonderful to be looking at things with eyes of love, and to be, no matter what happens, think, that's love looking for love. That's love looking to reach love. That's love looking to find love. And so it's either love or a call for love. That's all it is. So, if you could just look at everything that way, just tell it to yourself, And so it can only be, you know, one of two things, and they're both the same. Love, yep. Looking for love. That's it. Okay.
Yeah, the response is all the same. You want to read on, Michelle?
Yeah, I'll read on, unless you want to.
Doesn't matter.
Okay, I'll read. All right. That the application of these principles to such feelings would be to simply realize that you are not a good secretary. You erased all the files in the computer. So what? If you regard the whole situation from the point of view of eternity, what difference does it make? And like he said, it doesn't matter. Stop thinking about it. Stop wasting your time. You handle the situation by realizing that what is upsetting you is the interpretation you are making of what you did or what you failed to do. This is what is upsetting you. Not that you mistyped a letter or flunked an exam or pressed the wrong keys on the computer or lost your keys for the 10th time or you did not do the whatever it is that is not what is upsetting you. What is upsetting you is your interpretation of it, which is, quote, my God, what a terrible person I am. How inadequate. What a failure I am. What a sinful person I am, unquote. Uh-huh. That is the problem. It is not the thing itself. Again, it is the interpretation that we give it, which reminds us of the hidden belief of the, quote, unquote, true meaning of our sin, our murder of God, so that we could exist as a separated being. But this certainly does not mean that these metaphysical ideas should be used as an excuse for making mistakes or saying angry words to another. Recognizing that the form of the mistake is not the real mistake allows us to reconsider our original decision to choose the ego as our teacher instead of Jesus. Simple, easy. Not.
Simple, yes. Easy depends on whether or not we're choosing Holy Spirit in any moment, right?
You want to read?
It's always simple.
It's always simple.
Even though you may be blaming yourself, say, for losing your keys for the 10th time, your ego is only half right. The focus should be on the decision-making you that has chosen to prove, you know, emphasis on proof, that you are stupid by losing the keys. This is an aspect of the attraction of guilt. The way out is to become aware that losing your keys 10 times is your call for help. We're just talking about that. Everything's either an expression of love or a call for love. Then you can, and the appropriate response is always to respond with love. Then you can realize that you are making the whole thing up and that the specific reason you are bringing this on yourself is so you can prove that the sinner is not the decision maker in your mind, for if you knew that, you would simply change your mind. But rather, the specific personality you think of as yourself, the miserable and guilty sinner for having attacked God and usurped his rule. And that fits perfectly in with the workbook lessons this past week in the 90s that addressed this squarely, you know, head on.
Yeah.
Similarly, if you...
Before you go on, I just want to back up into that paragraph, because Ken is bringing up a concept that I think, again, you know, I really don't get it most of the time, is that the me trying to prove that the sinner, the bad thing, the person who does the bad stuff, is not the decision maker in my mind.
Right.
So, you know, I'm I'm trying to prove that I'm a victim.
Yeah.
This is what he's basically saying is, you know, I didn't do this. I'm not in charge of this. This thing, the devil made me do this. And so, you know, if I recognize that, no, the devil didn't make me do this. Nothing made me do this. You know, nothing has happened. You know, I'm thinking I did something, but nothing really happened. I'm thinking that I made a terrible world where bad things happen, but nothing really happened. So recognizing that I'm actually innocent is really the thing that has to occur here. to stop slinging guilt on myself and saying that I, you know, I'm bad because I did this, and I can just change my mind and see the truth about myself and see the reality of myself. And then all these things that I misrepresented to myself about myself no longer have any meaning.
When you said slinging, I flashed back to an image I had earlier in our conversation about projection, and I was thinking about caged monkeys that throw their feces, and it's kind of, I think that's the ego thought system, really. That whole strategy of projection is really nothing more than taking our own shit and throwing it out at everybody and everything else. And really, you know, it's just silly. It's just why would we do that when we recognize that it's boomerang poop, you know, it only comes back and hits us herself in the face because there is no other. I mean, exactly. So anyway, let me read the last paragraph before the quote. I think we've got a couple of minutes here. Similarly, if you read about something in the newspaper or hear about something on the radio, it is not the news that is upsetting you. It is your interpretation of it. That is why Jesus urges us to, quote, seek not to change the world, but to choose to change your mind about the world, unquote. That's from the introduction in chapter 21. He is urging us to recognize that it is never the situation or relationship in and of itself that bothers or upsets us, but always the reason for our choosing to see it the way we do. We choose to see a connection between the event and ourselves, and it is this connection of victimization that is the problem. And the connection, of course, takes place in the decision-making faculty of the mind. So the dream puppets of Bruce and Lynn are the problem. It's the decision maker that in our minds that has chosen to identify with the Bruce and Lynn and so forth dream puppet figures. Right? And then he concludes his paragraph with, in the context of the unreality of the world of time, Jesus explains that our problems do not lie in the past, but only on our holding on to them. Mm-hmm. He states, there is no link of memory to the past. If you would have it there, then there it is. But only your desire made the link, and only you have held it to a part of time where guilt appears to linger still. And I think he's referring to our entire experience in the world of space and time, because that's really what the metaphysics of the Course suggests, is that the only reason we experience space and time, kind of getting back to that introductory quote that we've read three times now, the only reason we do that is because we're afraid of the peace that's beyond that. And if we look at the guilt with the Holy Spirit and see that it's unfounded, it's no longer unconscious, and it starts out as unconscious, unfounded guilt. But once we look at it, it's no longer unconscious and it's no longer unfounded. And it becomes unfounded, because there's no real foundation for it, and we're out of there. Anyway, speaking of which, I think we just ran out of time.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah,
always,
we did.
Thanks again,
yeah.
Lynn. And you can always find me on acimblog.com, and I always look forward to our next conversation. So,
thank you so much. Bruce, and I love you, and I'll talk to you next week.
Likewise.
And I'm going to turn the mic over now to you, Carrie and Iris.
Good morning. Thank you, Lynn and Bruce.